Experts claim there is nothing tougher than a diamond. But at Diamonds Direct, we beg to differ. Have you ever met a mother? Strong, radiant, timeless. This Mother's Day, give her the gift that meets her match. With diamond jewelry starting at $200, plus Diamonds Direct's exceptional quality and unbeatable everyday price, you're sure to give her a gift that wows this generation and the next to come. Experience the thrill of jewelry shopping done right at Diamonds Direct. Diamonds Direct. Your love, our passion.
You know you've got a comeback in you. When you take the next step, you're going to make it count. For your career, for your family, for your life. You can earn a degree you're proud of with Purdue Global. Purdue Global is backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected and innovative public universities. This is your chance. This is your opportunity. This is your comeback. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
What's up, this your boy Lil Duval, and check out my podcast, Conversations with Unc, on the Black Effect Podcast Network. Each and every Tuesday, Conversations with Unc podcast feature casuals and in-depth talk about ebbs and flows of life and the pursuit of happiness. Unlike my work on stage, I tap into a more serious and sensitive side to give life advice and simply offer words of encouragement, yet remind folks to never forget to laugh. Every Tuesday, listen to Conversations with Unc, hosted by Lil Duval on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Presented by AT&T. Connecting changes everything.
Ethnically Ambiguous is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
Hello, Anna.
Hi, Shireen.
I feel like I started the episode saying the exact same thing in the exact same tone. But anyway, this is the intro before the episode. Today, we are joined by the one and only, truly like a gem on this planet, an angel of a human being, Gabe Gonzalez. He's a writer, a comedian, honestly, so much more. He's the host of the Stuff on Scruff app. He's the host of the Queerty Pod, which you should definitely listen to.
Check it out.
He's just phenomenal. I can't wait for you guys to learn more about who he is, where he was raised, how he found comedy.
And his almost chance at being a kid caster for Radio Disney. I know that's what you guys are really here for, so stay tuned.
Who are we? Where did we come from? Who do we become? What is it to be? What to be is it? Where are we? Who are my parents? Where are my pets? Why were we born? We are Ethnically Ambiguous.
Hi, Anna.
Hi, Shireen.
This is Ethnically Ambiguous. Wow. How are you? Actually, before we keep going, we're recording this on Thursday, May 20th. And you know what tomorrow is?
My birthday.
It's your birthday!
Yes, woo! I turn 31. I'm an old hag. Loving it!
I mean, I'm already 31, so shut your mouth.
There's something funny about where I was like, oh, I'm 31.
It doesn't feel like a real age. 31 is fake.
Nothing
like, it
feels real.
Made up.
Once you hit 30, it's like, okay, what are we doing here?
I still say I'm 30, not as a lie, but because I forget I turned 31.
Am I supposed to have a baby or something? What is this? 30?
But every time I think of your birthday, though, also
you think of me
Gemini
pregnant.
Queen. But I remember for like your whole life, you thought you were a Taurus.
Right,
then we had someone on the show.
No. I thought I was a Gemini my whole life, and then someone. Tomorrow's
the start of Gemini.
Yes, and I thought I was a Gemini my whole life. But I'm telling you, my friend's parent, my best friend at the time's parent, fuck her. I told her she couldn't follow me on Instagram anymore. Her mom's cool, so shout out to her mom, but fuck the daughter that I'm no longer friends with. But her mom pulled out one of those books that tells you exactly when the moon change happened for the exact time that you were born, 1:14 p.m. That's me, baby.
Oh my God, we have the same numbers. I'm 11:14, just like in
well,
a different
go. That's
order.
That's why we're friends.
One
I mean,
four.
Come on.
Yeah.
Everyone's like, astrology is not real. Okay, no. Look what's at this then?
Twin flames. I'm just kidding. Sorry, I hate that phrase so much.
Yeah, so she pulled out a book and was like, ooh, actually the moon was still, or like whatever, you were still technically, it was still Taurus at that point. It hadn't switched over. And I was like, you bitch. I was 17. I was like, I have thought I was a Gemini this whole time. You're going to come through and tell me I'm really a Taurus? So I identify as a cusp. And
that's to be honest though, that would happen to a Gemini. The fact that you are split is a very Gemini thing. Like, I don't know. The most Gemini thing I've ever heard of. But regardless, I'm excited that it's your birthday tomorrow. I hate that you're going to be working. Are you working tomorrow?
I mean, I'm always working. What is life?
Well, everyone, if you haven't yet, it's Monday and Anna's birthday was a few days ago. So go with your happy birthday on Twitter, on Instagram. You know what to do.
I mean, no, this wouldn't drop by Monday.
Oh, wait, I forgot. This is like a long time from now.
This will drop in like a month. So a month ago was my birthday.
Sorry.
We bank a baby.
I kept thinking we were going to drop this like last week from like a couple days from now. I'm dumb.
Sorry, guys. We have to bank them because our schedules are so busy.
No, this will come out in like July or something. So Anna's birthday was months ago. I'll just say the date. She was born on May 21st. I don't think I ever said her birthday date, but whatever.
Please. Don't share such personal information about me.
But my point still stands. If you didn't wish her happy birthday on May 21st, go
shoot me a text.
Fix your crime. Yeah.
Shoot me a text. I know you all saved my phone number when I was fucking doxxed. Okay, so shoot me a text. So many people texted me that day where I was like, here's the thing. I know you're trying to reach out and be like, I feel so bad for you that you've been doxxed and hacked. But you're still texting me with my personal phone number, which is fucking me up.
Wait,
mentally.
Strangers?
Well, like fans of the show would be like, they'd text me and be like, hey, I know you don't know who I am, but I'm just texting you and I won't bother you, but I'm just texting you to let you know that you have been hacked and all your information's online. And I'm like, I'm crumbling.
That's not okay.
But so please, like, you know, you have my number, you saved it. If you didn't, my phone number is, no, I'm just kidding.
Okay. Without further ado, I would love to bring our guest in so we can
forget about that.
Talk shit about everything. Our guest is someone that I am so lucky that I have worked with for a couple of weeks now. He's a writer, a comedian. He hosts on Scruff, the app Scruff, and also hosts the Queerty podcast, which I engineer and edit, and that's how I know him. It's Gabe Gonzalez. Woo!
Hey, how are you? Also, happy birthday a month ago, Anna.
Thank you.
I'm really late. I'm so sorry.
I know. It's tomorrow, but it was in fact a month ago.
Yeah.
Right.
Just time is a construct. So let's explore that. Let's unpack that.
In podcast land, time does not exist.
True.
Yeah. Shireen knows that better than anyone. She's taken like an hour and a half long conversation turned into 30 minutes, which is my fault.
I've learned a lot. And it's like it's a craft, a master of your craft to be able to make it still sound natural, you know, like a whole topic erased, but you had no idea. So I don't know. I'm not saying I'm a master of craft. I'm just saying like I've learned a lot, but yeah, regardless. I met you through doing Queerty. You host it, and you've had some amazing conversations with so many people on there. And I feel like we can get into that later on. But first, I would love to rewind and start from the beginning. I want our audience to get to know you a little bit. So just tell us where you were born and raised and where you're at.
Yeah, definitely. So I was born in the like Orlando metropolitan area. I was born and raised in a small town called Oviedo. Which was like when I grew up, there was like sort of like still like semi swampy and rural. Like there was, I mentioned this in an interview very recently. There was a chicken crossing sign in what was called downtown Oviedo. But like the main intersection was like a Baptist church, a KFC, a consignment store, and a gas station called, it was like quick something. It sounded really sexual. Quick and easy. Quick and pound or like quick and dump. And I was like, oh God, okay. So clearly that's how I got to where I am now with that gas station. Literally just called pump and dump, probably.
Yeah. Origin story.
Yes, yeah, truly. Yeah, just a gas station. But there are these like chickens that would hang out at that intersection. And they were like, I guess like, I don't know if they were like feral. The idea is that they're like semi-feral chickens that just end up roaming downtown Oviedo. So I used to have to stop for them on my way to school in the morning, which was really annoying. So I would always be late. And they also hung out outside the KFC, like outside the drive-thru.
I like the idea of like, that's the most those absurd. Damn chickens.
Yeah. They're like on strike. Like, don't eat us.
I didn't even live in like some like crazy farmland area. You know what I mean? It sounds like something that would happen in like rural Ohio. And I was like, I lived like 30 minutes outside of Orlando, Florida. Right. You know what I mean? It was very, very weird. And then, you know, you drive 10 minutes and suddenly you're in a really bougie suburb.
Yeah.
With like, I don't know, no chickens, certainly.
I will say the town Shereen and I went to college in Davis, mm-hmm. California. We went to UC Davis. We had that problem with turkeys. We had wild turkeys that would roam the streets. And this is kind of similar. It's like a California town. It's near the countryside. It's surrounded by a lot of countryside, but it's like a half hour outside of Sacramento. It's like, why are there like wild turkeys roaming around? And they wouldn't get out of the streets either.
Oh, of course.
It is a town really focused on our agriculture, though. So that's maybe part of it. But yeah, you're right. The first time I saw a gaggle of turkeys, I was like, what the fuck is going on? And everyone was like acting normal. And I was like, I gotta get out of here.
I have a question.
No, it was a great town.
Were you able to like get out and like herd the chickens out of the way?
Oh God, no. I didn't want to get out of my car. Okay. I was like, no fucking way. I'm going to get run over in this like weird ass dirt road.
Okay. Cause you couldn't do that with the turkeys.
Oh God.
The turkeys were like aggressive.
Give a fuck. Yeah.
Right. Growing up, did you feel like you wanted to leave where you grew up, or were you just like how was your experience growing up there?
Oh my God. Absolutely. I have this memory I think back to that is like very vivid in my mind. So like there was this road called 419. It was just like kind of, you could basically get on the highway and get to parts of town faster. And there was this like U-shaped on-ramp, and we would always take that on-ramp to go to church Sunday mornings. And I remember there was like one Sunday morning, I was like 10 or 11, and I'm staring out of this on-ramp. I don't know why this is like a memory I remember from my childhood. And I was like, 20 years from now, I will be 30 and I won't be living here anymore. And I was like, that's gonna happen. So I just need to wait for that. I was like, I'm gonna be fine. But it was like, it was literally a thing I needed to repeat to myself very often. I was like, and now I'm like, okay, well, I'm 30. So
you manifested this.
Yeah, we don't have a house, but you know, we did it. We made it to Brooklyn, New York, and we have an apartment. but honestly though, I think that like, I don't know, just it was definitely the kind of place where I was like, I got to get the fuck out of here. I feel bad in some ways because, you know, I think a lot of my cousins still live in Central Florida, and it's not that I like don't want to go back. I just don't want to go back. I don't know. Yeah. But I do go back to see my family when I can, and they're all in like Tampa now. I don't think I have any family left in Oviedo.
Yeah. And can you just tell us where your parents are from and like what the demographics are like over there?
Yeah, totally. So my mom grew up in Rio Piedras, Puerto Rico. She grew up in like actually this subdivision that we go back to visit all the time because the family that she grew up with, that my grandmother was closest with while they were growing up in Puerto Rico, this is like a suburb right outside of San Juan. They still live there, and like they point to houses and they're like, that family still lives there, that family still lives there. And so my mom basically moved from Puerto Rico to Tampa, Florida when she was like 11 or 12. She was the youngest of five. And my grandfather got Alzheimer's, and he wasn't diagnosed for a very long time because he was very young when it happened. And a lot of people were like, I don't think they thought he could have had it, but B, I don't think a lot of people understood how to deal with Alzheimer's. It was like the early 80s.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so I think once they figured out what was going on, they were like, okay, like you can't get the best treatment here. You have to go to a few places. And, you know, some of the options were up north, and then another option was Tampa, Florida.
Wow.
So yeah, my grandma was like, I'm not going to move to a fully different climate. Like, we'll go to Florida. We'll make it work. But it was wild because like my mom basically grew up having like a fairly comfortable life in a suburb in Puerto Rico, and then moving to like Tampa, Florida, and like having to use food stamps because like, I guess the Air Force wasn't given like my grandfather like the official discharge because they didn't know what was going. It basically was like their life changed entirely, and it was like a huge kind of maybe not a 180, but like definitely a big change in their life. And so I think that kind of influenced my mom's like desire for me to hustle, but also kind of like her desire to return to Puerto Rico. As soon as I went to college, she moved back. She was like, fuck it, I hate being in Florida. And the thing she told me that was so funny, she was like, when I came to the States, English speakers made me feel stupid, and I hated it because I spoke English with an accent. It was like what I call the Sofia Vergara syndrome, where she just plays like the busty idiot because the accent, I guess, reads as stupid, even though she's like a very accomplished woman. You know what I mean? Like, she's been in the industry. She's been in for a really long time. Maybe she's not the best actress. But it was the same with my mom. My mom was like, I'm tired of being around people who think I'm stupid because of my accent. I was like, I speak two languages.
Yeah. In reality, she's smarter than anyone that is making fun of her. Yeah.
Fully, right? I don't know. So there's that. And my dad, I was never really close with my dad growing up. I haven't talked to him in like 6 years, and I'm not exactly sure where he's from, but I know one time we went to go visit an uncle in a very mountainous region in the western part of Puerto Rico. We were there for like Christmas, and like one of the traditions was like, you know, cooking a pig, a lechon, out in a big fucking fire outside. But then they like cut the head off, put it on top of a stick, and there was like a procession slash march down the mountain. I was like, okay, maybe Oviedo's not that bad. Maybe I'll come back. Like, it was very, you know, it was dope. It was great. But it was like a very kind of like rural Puerto Rican vibe. You know, like they had me milk a cow. Yeah. I obviously got shit all over my arms. I don't know what I expected milking a cow was going to be like.
Right.
You know what I mean? So it was like stuff like that where I was like, I don't know if this little like gringo-fied gay boy is ready for this yet. And, you know, yeah. I got used to it. I've been back many times since, but it was kind of a wild time. The first time I think I went out there with my family. Right.
That's interesting to know an unusual or like atypical immigration story that like centered around your grandfather's health versus yeah. like, let's go make a life for ourselves, X, Y, Z. Because I think that probably affected how your mom even viewed it, right? Like, it's totally. Not like she had maybe the guilt of being like, my parents moved here to make a better life. Like all so many children of immigrants feel. So that's really interesting to me that to know, and also just really sad to know like that was, to save your grandfather, essentially, they had to make a huge sacrifice.
No, for real. Yeah, I think it was just kind of hearing that story, I think, shaped so much of my mom's upbringing and sort of like, I don't know, that side of her. And, you know, my dad's side is, you know, relatives there are more scattered. And I think you get more of that traditional story. Like my grandparents on my dad's side spent some time in New York. And then they went back to Puerto Rico and then they moved to Florida and then they were in Puerto Rico. My dad went to college. So there's that whole, you know, there's that kind of like back and forth. I think there's such prominent Puerto Rican communities, both in New York and parts of Central Florida, that I think it's like, those are kind of natural places to sort of bounce to mm-hmm. if maybe you are looking to get off the island. And I know that the story of so many Puerto Ricans is, you know, they call it this kind of brain drain, this idea that better educational opportunities or perhaps, you know, more lucrative employment or industries can be found in the contiguous United States and not in this like colonized place that has, you know, borne the brunt of a lot of things. I don't think it should have to, right? Mm-hmm. I think like Puerto Rico is essentially a contemporary colony that has been oppressed in many ways, but I think economically is one of the ways that I think frustrates me the most looking at like this conversation surrounding Puerto Rico's debt. Yeah, there's a whole hour and a half we could talk about that.
Oh, yeah.
I mean,
the plagues of imperialism and colonization, they're deep and really frustrating.
Yeah, and the brain drain is so real that like so many immigrants leave their countries, come here, and then have like Americans be like, go back to your country after you give us your you know, chemistry brain, assignment for the vaccine, but then get the fuck out of here. And you're like, okay, you would all be dead. You would all be dead if you did not actually take, you know, it's just crazy. It's like you have, I mean, I'm trying not to say crazy anymore, but guys, I'm human. It's more like surreal that we have all these incredible immigrants who come from different countries. And then, you know, the work that's done and then they're treated like, because, you know, my mom is an electrical engineer, has an accent and is treated like an idiot. Like same thing that your mom went through. And it's like these people have gone through so much stuff that like I could my spoiled, privileged ass. If you told me to move to a different country right now and learn the language, I'd be like, way. You know, like I can't do anything. I can podcast, but like I couldn't do, like my mom came to a different country to go to college and went to college in a language she didn't know and had to teach herself. Are you fucking kidding me? And then got a degree and then started a career and started a life in this whole other country. And now like what? To me, that's wild. Yeah. And then like everyone in this country's like, ugh. You bitch, like, how dare you be from a different country?
And it's frustrating because they're so racist and bigoted towards the successful, in quotes, ones, right? Like, you can achieve so much and give so much of yourself and be so intelligent and so educated, but it's never enough.
Yeah.
My parents also have accents, and there is the specific face that I see people make when they talk sometimes that enrages me. And like my dad has a way of talking that sometimes sounds like he's being like really blunt, but that's generally just like him trying to express himself in English. Mm-hmm. And people think, I really hate the assumption that they think, like, maybe just especially like people of color and Arab men, like, oh, he's being rude, or like my mom is an idiot, or like whatever. I just hate that face that I can like imagine. I mean, I'm sure both of you can like picture the face I'm talking about. Where it's just
it's really frustrating. I think on the other side, like, what frustrates me too is that, like, I maybe not in every instance, but I think a lot of times, like, the same people living here, like, you know, Puerto Ricans aren't immigrants, but I think they do share a lot in common with that kind of Latin American migrant story. But it's like the added weirdness with Puerto Rico then is that, like, a lot of Americans will go to Puerto Rico either as tourists or taking advantage of, I think it used to be known as Ley 22, like Law 22. I think it's since been changed recently, like under some new act or revised. But it's basically this law where if like U.S. citizens can prove residency in Puerto Rico for more than like half the year or something like that, they get like all these wild tax breaks, which is something a lot of, like business owners have taken advantage of. But then we're seeing this sort of like colonizer gentrification process happening. And you're also seeing like a lot of like weird white like Bitcoin tech entrepreneurs trying to go there and like lobby the government to pass more laws to benefit them. A few weeks ago, or maybe like over a month ago, there was this story about a guy who was there for the same reason, trying to establish residency in Puerto Rico, because obviously the tax laws there are different because they aren't a fucking state. And I don't want them to be, but that's my opinion. And we can talk about that another time. he basically was like on a golf course and this dog grabbed his golf ball in its mouth and ran away. And the guy just shot the dog. The guy shot the fucking dog.
Wow.
And fully, I think, just assumed that because he was a wealthy American of Puerto Rico, he could shoot a fucking dog that was on a golf course interrupting his golf game. Obviously, this man was arrested. But it was like, it's also wild. And it's like the same thing that we saw during the pandemic, I think, too. And I'm sure, you know, people in other places can maybe relate to American tourists doing this. But like, you know, seeing Puerto Ricans being punished criminally for like not abiding by certain COVID restrictions, and then seeing white Americans kind of like walking around Puerto Rico with impunity, you know, folks from the States,
the elitism,
not following restrictions. Yeah, exactly. And I think there is this idea that they are, this perception that perhaps they're untouchable, that the Puerto Rican police or Puerto Ricans have criticized the Puerto Rican police for kind of buying into. So it's just like so many layers of shit. But I, you know, it's the same with my friends who I was talking to that had relatives in Mexico during, you know, especially folks that live close to these vacation spots in Mexico. They're like, it's really difficult because they want to keep working, but the government's not putting any restrictions on like tourists coming in. And then it's like, right. All right, well, we're in the middle of a pandemic. So.
And you see all these photos of mostly white people, but like it could be anybody, like on these vacations, and all the staff is wearing masks and the people that are in the photos are just like unmasked. And it's just like, it's infuriating. Like, yeah. Especially back when, I mean, I don't know what even the vaccine situation is like in Puerto Rico, but a while ago when no one was vaccinated, it was so like, you're putting everyone at risk. Like one person can infect so many people in this one hotel. The lack of human decency and the elitism, it's just disgusting.
Yeah. And I'm trying, you know, I am trying to like think very critically about how much pressure we put on individuals making individual decisions, right? Because I think the obvious thing surrounding us is that we have been failed on a structural level because like, despite how much we pay in taxes, sometimes this country doesn't do anything to make sure its citizens are safe or surviving something like this. It's kind of like a go out and deal however you can. But at the same time, I do think that like, we can know that and acknowledge that while still pointing out a very privileged or perhaps harmful, for lack of a better word, choices that more privileged people can make in these situations, right? Because even though I don't think that pressure should be on someone's personal decisions, these are the circumstances we're under, right? And your choice as somebody who either has healthcare or thinks the pandemic is a hoax or whatever, right? Like, your decision to go on this vacation does have ramifications in this country that you do not live in communities that do not have as many resources as you. So it's like that can also not go unacknowledged in my mind, I think.
Oh, 100%. I personally think people do have a personal responsibility to hold themselves accountable. Like, it's the very bare minimum thing you can do. And the privilege just like reeks off of you if it's not, if you don't even consider that. Like, it's... It's the same kind of thing where you don't care about anything if it doesn't directly affect you. And regardless, I'm just going to ramble on and just rage for the rest of the time.
I mean, it's true. It's like I was briefly on Facebook to post about this show. I don't really go on it or look on it because it's hell. But I saw because it was like a lot of people I'm like friends with or were interacting with this post where this like, I mean, he's a friend of mine from high school. Whatever, he's a nice guy. He's very much like living the kind of hippie nomad-y style lifestyle, but like also involved in like community politics and all that crap, whatever. He posted like, after long thoughts or whatever, after a long decision, I've decided I will not be getting the vaccine. Like this whole diatribe about his like personal feelings and all this stuff. And we're like, yeah, whatever. Okay. And then my friend, he comes through and he's a man of color. I don't want to say too much because all my friends are immediately going to know what I'm talking about. But he comes through. He could possibly. The person I'm shouting out like is the best. Like, I love him. He's also a friend from high school. He comes through on this post like, I don't know if you know this, but people of color are disproportionately affected by like comes through with the stats, like reading him being like, and so if you choose not to get the vaccine, please stay the fuck away from people of color. And I was like, thank you, you dumb bitch. Like, nothing in his post really acknowledged his privilege and that, like, the world he lived in and how he could literally be from a good family but still, like, live a nomad hippie lifestyle where you're like, okay, dude. Like, I know your parents are professors, you know? Like, you're like, I know what your parents do. I grew up with you.
Yeah.
Your dreadlocks don't make it, like, wow. So, like... there's a chance I'm going to get some backlash for this. But anyway, I don't care because it was a fucking annoying post that I was like, you live in your own world. Like, we don't get that. Like, my mom was in Iran when the fucking coronavirus broke out and she was stuck there. We don't get options like this, you know? Like, we don't just get to be like, I actually don't really trust the science. It's like, well, my dad almost died and then my brother almost died. So, like, I'm sorry, but I trust science because I watched it almost destroy my family. So fuck you. At least acknowledge the world you're in or don't come around us. Like my friend said, like, stay the fuck away from us because we don't need you to come and destroy our communities because you live in some like bubble land where you're like, I play acoustic guitar. And it's like, cool, go away. I'm really coming for this guy, but annoyed the shit out of me.
He sounds like a moron, so I'll go on record. I know who you are, but you're a moron. I would love to get into your life a little bit more, Gabe. But before we do that, let's take our first commercial break. We'll be right back.
Live Nation presents Concert Week. Now through May 14th, get $25 tickets to over 5,000 shows. That's up to 75% off a summer full of your favorite artists like 21 Savage, Alanis Morissette, Cage the Elephant, Celeste Barber, Dierks Bentley, Fade, Hootie and the Blowfish, Janet Jackson, Kidz Bop Kids, Meghan Trainor, Bizzle Fuma, Sarah McLachlan. Get tickets to more than 5,000 summer shows for just $25. Until now through May 14th. Visit LiveNation.com/Concert Week to learn more and plan your summer with Sean Paul, Sum 41, 30 Seconds to Mars, oh, and Two Door Cinema Club.
Are you still searching for your perfect place to call home? Well, now is the time to buy at Fisher Homes. If you're looking to move in before the end of 2024, May could be your last opportunity to start building your dream home and close before the year's end. If you're hoping to move in even sooner, Fisher Homes also has homes that are move-in ready and waiting for you, where you can start enjoying the benefits of homeownership even faster. Schedule your personal tour with a new home advisor today at fisherhomes.com and make this spring the season you find your perfect home sweet home.
Good sleep should come naturally, and with the new Natural Hybrid mattress, it can. A collaboration between award-winning mattress brand Leesa and home design favorite West Elm, the Natural Hybrid is the culmination of these two companies' shared values: premium materials, meticulous craftsmanship, and sustainable practices. Made with natural latex, responsibly sourced natural wool, and environmentally safe foams, the Natural Hybrid elevates your sleep sanctuary. Indulges your senses and supports a greener tomorrow. Plus, when you purchase the Natural Hybrid, you're also helping fuel Leesa's work with shelters and those in need. Since 2015, Leesa has donated more than 40,000 mattresses to ensure children and families have a safe place to sleep. Don't put off a good night's sleep any longer. Get a Leesa mattress today for a sound sleep tonight. Visit Leesa.com/iHeart. That's LEESA.com/iHeart.
And And we are back with the one and only Gabe Gonzalez. I want to pivot a little bit and I want to get into how you started comedy, started writing. Did you know growing up that you were interested in expressing yourself creatively, or like, how did you find that for yourself?
Yeah, unfortunately, this was very clear to me early on. My parents tried to make me play baseball for a really long time. It's like every Puerto Rican rite of passage, and I was terrible. And I really, really wanted to do a school play. So we did, I remember we did this ridiculous like musical review at the private Montessori school I went to in the fifth grade, where my mom worked at the front office. So she knew everything I was fucking doing, which was terrible. And you know, Montessori schools give you freedom. So she was moderating those choices.
But also, I know from the Queerty podcast, you were raised pretty Catholic, right? So that's also another restriction that
fully
probably...
Catholic. And so we did some play where I played like the Big Bad Wolf for a song, and it was terrible. And then I auditioned. Everybody was like, Ingrid, you have to put your child... Like, you have to put your child in musicals. Like, enough of this. This is done. Like, it's clearly what he wants to do. Just, like, give in. So I auditioned for You're a Good Man, Charlie Brown at the Orlando Youth Theater. When I was like 10 or 11, I had no idea what the fuck I was doing. I had no monologue. I spoke for a minute. And then I sang
Baby
with
Gabe.
No accompaniment. Yeah, the comedic rap I did as the Big Bad Wolf in our school play. And I got cast as Charlie Brown.
That's amazing. Oh, Baby Gabe. Oh, yeah. This is the cutest story in my brain.
Do we have footage?
There is footage somewhere. Okay. I know it's in a box in like my grandma's attic.
We'll
but
wait.
They did cut two of my solos because I had no musical theater experience. So they were like, you're going to be the lead, but we're just going to kind of make everything an ensemble number where you'd be alone. Is that cool? And I was like, great. Got it. Cool. Awesome.
Your solos?
Yeah. That's a crime. That's a hate crime.
Yeah, it was true. It was truly, yeah.
So was that your first time like on stage and stuff?
Yeah, I fucking loved it. It was great. It was so much fun. And then I auditioned for this like thing. The like local Orlando Radio Disney station was holding auditions for this position called Kidcaster. And I remember when I was in like, I must have been like 13 or 14. I auditioned to become a Radio Disney Kidcaster. And they were basically just like, kind of like glorified assistants. We would like, we were paid, but we would do like voiceovers and like PSAs for like random shit. And that was like kind of, technically that was my first job. That was my first job.
Yeah.
And
You've
my mom
hustling.
Would drag
You've
me. I
hustling.
Know, truly. Yeah. She got headshots early on. You know what I mean? We know our angles, at least for radio. I've been podcasting since before it was cool.
Oh, yeah. That's it so sounds cool. Like it, honestly. Like you said, Kidcaster, literally. Like, ahead of your time.
It was so, God, it was just so horrifying. And my mom would drive me an hour. My mom drove me an hour from where we lived to this place called Celebration, Florida, which was literally like a Disneyfied town. They had a like homeowners association that required like everybody have the same grass and your home could only be painted four different colors. And it was like a neighborhood right next to Disney. And it was horrifying. It was so scary.
Is that
where the first town I hooked up with a boy? But
interesting. Is that
romantic.
Like where, because it wasn't Orlando was like the big Disney spot for a while for like what was it called that like Britney and Justin did? That was like the Disney.
Oh, yeah. The Mouseketeers. That was a huge.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Because like Disney was out there. Nickelodeon Studios were out there. Yeah. They did all that. I think Orlando was just like booming for horrifying kids television in the 90s. That was really it. Yeah.
I feel like it peaked back then, probably. Orlando peaked.
Yeah.
Just trying to relive its glory days.
Yeah. Oh, my God. Truly. Yeah. We'll never get back there.
Yeah, but I'm glad your mom at least was open to driving you to these places. Like, was she, did she like think it was a viable long-term thing, or is it just like, oh, let him have fun for now?
She was really supportive about it because I think she saw it's something I wanted to do. And I think she kind of like clocked that I was good at it, kind of, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And I think there was this sort of, there was constantly this like push and pull, and that it's like, it's not something that like young men were expected to do, but it was something I was good at. And so I think, you know, finding different outlets for that creative stuff, like being like, my son works in radio, instead of being like, my son's the lead in the musical, was like a little more tolerable for her at the time. You know what I mean? So we found a nice halfway point. Like, yeah. And then after that, you know, I did a lot of speech and debate, which we called forensics in high school. Mm-hmm. That was wild. It was like, I would travel to tournaments in different states. That's the first way I started getting out of Florida, like traveling on these school trips to competitive speech and debate tournaments. Mm-hmm. We did musicals. My parents wouldn't let me audition for Lacage, which we did at my high school my senior year. It ended up getting produced at a local community theater because my high school was a private Episcopalian school and they banned them from doing Lacage like a few weeks before it was supposed to open.
Oh my God.
They got written up in the local paper and I wasn't involved in the production at all. And I was like, this was my chance. I was so bitter about it. It was so funny.
I mean, it's something I know you hold on to. It sounds like you still hold on to now.
I'm still mad I wasn't in that production. It was so brilliant. It was so great. Wow. So yeah, just like a lot of shit in high school. And then obviously I got to college and I told my parents I was going to be a poli-sci major and I didn't because I hated it. Like all the classes were just like realist perspective on world politics. That was like zero-sum game, really dehumanizing. I was like, fuck this. I'm joining an improv group. I'm starting to smoke weed. I'm openly sucking dick. And my major is now going to be something called modern culture and media. So
don't know what that is, but I like it.
Me neither, to be entirely honest, but I graduated with honors and it's on my resume. So
yeah, it's vague. You can do anything.
Yeah, I majored in technocultural studies, which is like technology, culture, machines, and art, which, let's be real, is nothing really.
I mean,
it's everything and nothing.
Give me a thesis project on the Borg and we'll be set. That is, that's what I want from that. Yeah.
I have a couple of questions. I'm trying to not overwhelm you with what I want to know. But okay, my first question is, I mean, first of all, it sounds like you're honestly very experienced talking out loud in a public forum. Like, since you were younger, like, I'm very impressed. Like, speech and debate, radio, on stage stuff, impressive. I understand why you're a great host on the podcast now. first of all, did you, when you went to college to New York and this, and you wanted to get out of your hometown from a young age, was New York always like your end point? Like, as far as like, oh, this is where I should go to further my passion for like acting and stuff, or like, was, I'm curious why you chose New York.
Mm-hmm. So I actually, okay. So the funny thing is, New York was kind of always that like little gay beacon. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. It's like, it's where everything happened. Gossip Girl came out when I was in high school. Oh, and I wanted to go to fucking, you know, yeah. But I actually ended up going to college in Providence. I went to Brown. And so I went to like the coldest fucking place I could possibly go. I was like, I want to get away from Florida. Give me somewhere icy, wintry. I want brusque white people who are used to, you know, scooping snow out of their driveways. Like, give me that. The full opposite of just like going to Spanish church and eating fried fish in the morning. Like, and that was interesting. I did take a semester off to go to Chicago because I thought I wanted to go there. I did like the semester thing at Second City, which was super dope. And I thought I was going to move to Chicago for a while. But I had been going to New York a lot, partly because I was like dating some dude whose parents had an apartment there. And like, New York was closer to Providence. And so like, in a kind of spur of the moment decision, I think right after college, I was like, it's going to be New York. But I didn't really have anywhere to go. I had no money. I did not have relatives there. So I, just couch surfed there because I was like, this is where we're going to be. And it also did seem like the right place to be to kind of balance my interests. Like, Chicago, I feel like, is like a very comedy theater centric city. And if you go there to do that, you're like doing that. And it felt like New York was a little more, it was kind of like Brown, where you could like kind of pick and choose from shit you liked. So I was like, I want to do stand up, but I also want to be in a place where it's like, I could maybe write for late night, or maybe I could work at a digital media company, which I did for a while. And so I think New York just had more options and I was a little lost, to be honest. I didn't really know what I wanted to do for, I think, that first year or two.
So, I mean, it sounds like your parents were like not the typical, like, or your mom and specifically, who was just like, you're a star in a way. not in all those words, but like was giving you good vibes in that regard. Like, I mean, Shereen and I have the experience of my parents being like, are you trying to die in the streets? What do you mean art? Like, how was that for the rest of your, for like outside of your mom, like your extended family, like was everyone very supportive or were they all just like, oh, Gabe's just doing his little thing? Or like, what was that experience like? And like, how much did your mom in that regard, like, back you up? I'm just like curious because like, I'm so intrigued by your mom's like, I love you and I think you're talented.
It's a foreign concept to
like,
us personally.
I don't understand like what you're saying, that your mom was supportive of you. Like, I don't, those words don't connect.
Right. She drove you to your theater things?
You didn't have to lie about where you were going?
Right.
Okay, that comes with many caveats. Yeah. Okay, I will say that there are many, there are many caveats there.
Yeah, I'm sure,
When I changed my major, she was fucking furious.
Mm. Oh,
but it was like, it also happened, I had been there a semester, I took an econ class, I hated it. And then I was looking over my financial statements and I was like, wait, you're literally not paying for a dime of this. Like, you can't. Okay. So I was like, I can change my major and there's nothing you can do. it was the first moment where I was like, I'm free. I could literally, I could do whatever
I'm
the fuck
in control.
I want.
Yeah.
Fully. Wow. And like, and now I'm fucking like, paying for it. Yeah. Right. I can look at my credit score now and see what that freedom wrought. But yeah. You know, it's like, which is a sham. Credit scores are a fucking sham anyway.
Oh,
but,
it's all a scam. Yeah. It's all
just to hold us down, baby.
But yeah, she was livid when I changed my major. And I think she knew it was kind of like a great creative outlet, but she always wanted me to like kind of channel it toward like journalism or politics. Right. That's what she wanted.
A more serious occupation.
Yeah. She was like, you're going to be Jorge Ramos. And I was like, I want to fuck Jorge Ramos. I don't know if I want that job. Like, definitely early crush.
Interesting.
Yeah. I'm curious now that you mentioned like being gay and like growing up and like knowing you were gay, was that ever something that you bumped heads with as far as like her being really Catholic?
Yeah, totally. So I think some of the earliest moments with this were with my dad's parents in Orlando. So like my grandma on my mom's side helped raise me when I was very, very young. But when it came like picking me up from school, my dad's parents lived closer. And I remember we were like at a Target or something. My grandma bought me a Barbie. Like I wanted a mermaid doll for like taking a bath. And I remember my grandfather coming in and finding it and flipping the fuck out. Aww. It is like one of my earliest memories. It was like such an unwarranted reaction. He was really mad at her. And so it's like, that's the first time it clicked. I think it was like, I want to play with girls' toys. Like, I want to like brush her fucking hair. I want to watch The Little Mermaid. I want to steal my cousin's Barbies. And so that was kind of a battle. And I remember I like, you know, you're young and it's hard to kind of extricate like gender and gender roles from sexuality. And so I remember like, I kind of knew I found like men handsome. I like really had a thing for like Aladdin, Prince Eric, like boring brunette men with a strong jawline. that I went through that phase at like age 5. So I got that out of my system. But I remember asking my mom, I like worked up the courage. And I was very young. I'm sure maybe I'm remembering this kind of piecemeal, but I do remember asking her, am I a girl? And she freaked, like chased me around the bed and like pinned me down. She was like, what do you mean by that? And I was like, I don't know. I don't know. And then I was like, I heard it on TV, right? So like little things like that throughout the years where it's like, I went to a summer camp and she found texts from a boy. And I was like, that's just how theater boys talk to each other. It's like, you know,
there
was
like a double life element to your sexuality, which is like,
fully.
I can only imagine being a very young child and having that experience, just being like, oh, I need to hide this. You know what I mean? That's so sad.
Wait, how old do you think you were when you were really like, when you were starting to understand what it means to be gay?
I wasn't even in school yet. Oh. I was like, and if I was, I was like preschool, kindergarten.
Wow. That's
and it's like, yeah, cool. I have weirdly vivid memories from that era too. Like I was like, there was this girl in preschool named Jade Newman. Jade, shout out to Jade Newman if you're listening. I have no idea where she is or what she looks like now. And I used to call her my girlfriend, but I was like, Jade's actually like my best friend. Like, I just want her to be my friend.
You were ahead of your time, man. That was your first beard.
Like, yeah, she was. I would tell my mom Jade was my girlfriend, but I was like, I don't like her like that. I don't get what it means.
Yeah. Okay,
honestly, you're a gay prodigy in my eyes. Yeah. Like, that's
all. Podcasting and finding beards at age 5. Yeah.
Kid casting
I just knew I wasn't doing the boy things and I didn't feel the way boys felt. And the funniest thing is that like my uncle taught me this refrain growing up. My uncle in Tampa, whenever we would go to visit, he was like, Gabby, because they would call me Gabby. He's like, Gabby, we're going to Hooters and tell them why we're going to Hooters. And I would always respond to see melons and butts. That's funny. That was like our uncle nephew routine at family gatherings, which was really fucked up.
But you were just playing into it. You were like, I got to satisfy this, my uncle.
I was like, look, this is a gig. I don't necessarily like the script, but it pays well.
That was your first that was your first bit, really.
Yes. That's what the first time I sold out was doing stand-up with my uncle.
I do like that. Gabby, we're going to Hooters.
Yeah,
you're
right?
Like, I'm hey. Gay.
Yes. Yeah.
But let's
I think that added to the humor. Like that definitely, the delivery was a little, you know, flippy. There was some flittiness to it.
I think internally it was probably hilarious to you.
Oh, now it is. Oh my God. He makes me say it now. Like I'm fully out now. And he's Gabby. And I'm like, no.
It brings him back. It brings him back. This is an unbreakable joke, an unbreakable bond.
Yeah.
Truly, fully, forever. Yeah.
But that does bring me to the question I had earlier. When you're in college, you decide to take improv classes and stuff. Was the pivot to comedy kind of like seamless for you? Or was it like a decision you had to make like, oh, I want to focus more on comedy versus musical theater? Or I want to know what that was like for you.
Yeah. And did your mom know?
I know, right? Yeah. My mom did come to the Parents Weekend improv team show, which was great. Oh, you know, she loved it. She was like, that was cute. I don't get it, but it was funny. And I was like, you fucking hated that. It was funny because I think it goes back to like high school. There was in speech and debate, there was like interpretation events. And there was like dramatic interpretation and humorous interpretation. And I really wanted to do dramatic.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You basically take a script or a book and you would cut it down to like a 10-minute performance and like do all the characters.
It's like an Aaron Sorkin script.
Yes. Yeah. Literally just the abbreviated. Yeah. And so I remember I wanted to do dramatic interp. And our speech and debate coach was like, you have to do humorous. He was like, you're just a funny looking kid. And I was like, thank you. That's a great thing to say to a fucking gay 14-year-old. Yeah. Awesome.
It's like someone telling you you're a character actor. You're just like,
literally, wow. Okay. That's and so rude. then I started doing humor and it did a lot. It was great. I mean, both did well, but I think people really responded to that. And then I started getting cast in more humorous roles in the plays. Like we did A Funny Thing Happened on the Way to the Forum and I got to sing the I Feel Pretty song. And like, we took that shit to like Scotland on some like high school theater trip. And like,
that's cool.
It was great. And so I was like, this is fun. I really like making people laugh. And maybe partly it's the immediacy of the feedback. Like, you know what I mean? Yeah. It's like immediate affirmation. You're like, cool, nailed it. You liked that. Let's like heighten the stakes or do that again. And I think improv was also kind of the easiest outlet for that instinct. You know, I did a lot of plays in college growing up too. We did like a really dramatic one where I had to play a gay man in Cuba in the 70s and I wore bell bottoms and a wig, but I was like in a dramatic role. But that, it was funny because to me that required a kind of dedication I wasn't willing to offer. Like, the theater directors were like, this is your life, right? And I was like, well, I don't know. And the improv folks were like, I'm a pre-med major, but I love funny voices. And I was like, great, this is my crew, right? Like, we have options. Right. But it didn't really click with me until I went to Second City. They had this program called Comedy Studies. At the time, it was like a semester-long program. I'm still paying off the loan I took out for that. Because I didn't get any credits for it. And I had to take out like a private loan. It was wild. But basically, they had classes 4 days a week. And it was like, you know, they had acting and they had improv and they had writing for like the stage, sketch writing and TV writing and all that. And we also had a clown class, which was hilarious. Like not like Hong Kong clowning, but like pantomime. It was clown. Wild. Yeah.
I've met a couple people that went to clown school. Yeah. It's very interesting.
They take it very seriously. It's not like a joke.
Yeah.
Truly, though.
They're thespians.
It was a whole, there was, you know, we read a lot about the theory behind it and sort of like the physicality of it. And like, that was really interesting. And I brought that into some of my weird like nightlife comedy sets early on moving to New York. But the class that like really, really clicked with me was this class called Context for Comedy. And it was taught by this comedian named Jen Ellison. She's great. She was one of my favorite teachers there. And it was basically the assignment. It was once a week. It wasn't like one of the regular classes. And we would just bring in an article and like create a character based on the article or write a sketch or create a desk piece in the style of The Daily Show. And it was basically a class to teach you how to do satire, like how to respond to the world around you. And I think that was the moment that kind of bridged those two sensibilities where I was like, okay, I love doing comedy, but I'm also very interested in politics and cultural and social criticism and political criticism. And like, I don't want to lose that. And so I think in that class, I found something that I didn't find in improv. Because like improv was like, you know, do a funny jiggle and like, and heighten the thing. And someone's drunk in the front row and they love it. And then you ask for a word and someone's going to say vagina. And like that, you know what I mean? And that was fine. But I think that like semester in Second City was like really wild. And I was like, this is what I want to do. And so I think that was the moment where it clicked and I kind of found my lane. And, you know, I think it led me to some gigs that have helped me a lot to get to where I am now. But I think, you know, that was a good starting point. It's not necessarily where I'm at today, but I think that was like that first click where it was like something in this realm works and really excites me.
Yeah.
That's cool. That makes sense. That's interesting. Like, I didn't know they had like theory-like classes at Second City because you just really think of it as like improv, SNL, characters.
Right.
That's cool.
I think that was what was unique about this too, because they kind of pitched it as like a semester-long conservatory. Uh-huh. Anne Libera. It was run, and I think she's still there to this day. And, you know, Second City has gone through some ups and downs, and there have been some folks there that have made some, you know, decisions that kind of just reinforce systemic racism. But I think Anne was always somebody that, at least in my experience, was kind of like someone open and willing to listen and improve, right? And I think she curated a really interesting experience that, you know, for all the flaws these theaters kind of have in their systems of finding talent and uplifting diverse talent. I think it really showed me a way to look at comedy so differently and felt mm-hmm. like a comprehensive education in comedy. Right. And that was cool. And it's honestly, it's the one thing in college that I will take with me to this day. Like the most useful things I did were that and date somebody who taught me how to roll joints. Like those are the two best things that came out of college for me.
Man.
Fully. Yeah. I mean, I hate the dude that taught me, but he taught me. And it's the best thing I got out of that relationship.
So. Brown.
Yes, fully. Oh my God. Yeah.
Interesting.
He went to RISD, but.
Oh, he's a RISD kid.
Yeah, right.
Of course he was bringing drugs to you. Just joking. Yeah. We're backing up. We're going back in time. Now, should we take an ad break?
Yeah.
Let's do an ad break and then I'll ask.
Live Nation presents Concert Week. Now through May 14th, get $25 tickets to over 5,000 shows. That's up to 75% off a summer full of your favorite artists like 21 Savage, Alanis Morissette, Cage the Elephant, Celeste Barber, Dierks Bentley, Fade, Hootie and the Blowfish, Janet Jackson, Kidz Bop Kids, Meghan Trainor, Pistol Pluma, Sarah McLachlan. Get tickets to more than 5,000 summer shows for just $25. Until now through May 14th. Visit LiveNation.com/concertweek to learn more and plan your summer with Sean Paul, Sum 41, 30 Seconds to Mars, and Two Door Cinema Club.
Are you still searching for your perfect place to call home? Well, now is the time to buy at Fisher Homes. If you're looking to move in before the end of 2024, May could be your last opportunity to start building your dream home and close before the year's end. If you're hoping to move in even sooner, Fisher Homes also has homes that are move-in ready and waiting for you, where you can start enjoying the benefits of homeownership even faster. Schedule your personal tour with a new home advisor today at fisherhomes.com and make this spring the season you find your perfect home sweet home.
Good sleep should come naturally, and with the new Natural Hybrid mattress, it can. A collaboration between award-winning mattress brand Leesa and home design favorite West Elm, the Natural Hybrid is the culmination of these two companies' shared values: premium materials, meticulous craftsmanship, and sustainable practices. Made with natural latex, responsibly sourced natural wool, and environmentally safe foams, the Natural Hybrid elevates your sleep sanctuary. Indulges your senses and supports a greener tomorrow. Plus, when you purchase the Natural Hybrid, you're also helping fuel Leesa's work with shelters and those in need. Since 2015, Leesa has donated more than 40,000 mattresses to ensure children and families have a safe place to sleep. Don't put off a good night's sleep any longer. Get a Leesa mattress today for a sound sleep tonight. Visit Leesa.com/iHeart. That's LEESA.com/iHeart.
And we're back. I'm curious, what was Brown like for you? Because I feel like, you know, it's up there as one of the good schools, but it has like that. It literally has like a hippie bohemian reputation. Right. And then there's also, what was it? Hermione went there? Shit. Emma Watson?
Yeah.
Hermione. I'm an idiot. So what was that? What was Brown like? I'm actually just curious.
No lie, I was fully Emma Watson's RA for 1 year.
Oh my
her
God.
Sophomore year, my junior year. And the gag is that she was living with a bunch of friends who were like in my best friend's like other group of friends. Uh-huh. So that was like so surreal. But I remember I had to show up to campus early because she was moving into her suite early. And I will never forget like helping the dudes helping Emma Watson move in, being like, hey, I'm here early to help if you need anything. And like carrying her armchair up and just her being like really polite. But I'm like, we're the only two people in this building right now. So hi, this is weird. Right. I'm going to be on the floor below you smoking weed. Please don't tell on me. I think she was really sweet and kind of was in a really fucking weird position. I didn't know her that well, to be honest, but it was just like very surreal having to be like, hey, Gabe, like there's going to be paparazzi outside your dorm. And like, this is the rundown for what to do when the paparazzi show up and are hiding in bushes outside your dorm. Like, here's who to call from the school. Yeah. It was wild. But honestly, like that's part of the reason I went, that it was like, I visited and I was 17 and in high school and I visited and there was like a rainbow flag in the student union and everybody was like, seemed fucking happy. And I was just like, cool. I want to go to a place that's like very queer. And they also had a theater department where like, you didn't have to be a theater major to do the main stage plays. And like back then, like Gabe, who thought he was going to, you know, apply to NYU's theater school, like Stella Adler, or like go to fucking, I don't know, you know, it was nice. It offered a flexibility for somebody who is deeply indecisive to this day. It was great to go to a school with no requirements your freshman year.
It sounds like the perfect place for like a person with commitment issues. Like, I wish I would have gone there.
Yes. Wow, you clocked me. Okay, yeah, we're there. Yeah.
I mean, I was talking about myself, but like,
oh no, same here. Like, I was like, let me just try a little of everything and see what I like. Like,
I wouldn't have gotten in, unfortunately. Oh, if you want to trigger me,
you never know. Oh, there were some folks there that really surprised me. Yeah.
So one thing on the Emma Watson thing, which was random, I didn't even mean to bring up, like, let's talk about her, but I actually had a memory when you were talking about how her life was probably very surreal there. Mm-hmm. I heard that she, like no one took her seriously when she was trying to, like, audition. She didn't do any, like, plays, or she would try and audition for plays, but it was, like, a shit show for her because people were like, okay, Emma Watson or whatever. And, like,
well, yeah. So I remember, okay, so there were two theater groups at Brown. One, you know, obviously one was like kind of departmental and the main stage shows that were run by like the professors and the directors and grad students in that, in the department. And then there was another student group. Well, then there were two student groups. One was more closely affiliated with the department and the other one was kind of like, they had this like black box theater venue on like the outskirts of campus. And it was run by like the hip Harvard Westlake kids whose parents were in the TV industry and were like, I want to do an edgy production of The Seagull. And like, you think they're going to be douchebags, but they're actually really nice once you meet them. But like, some of them are not. But speaking of, Emma Watson auditioned for The Seagull and she got cast. And obviously no one was there for the audition. I don't know how she did. But the gag is they had to fully change how they sold tickets for that student group non-main stage venue. Because it used to be like you could log onto a website and just buy a fucking ticket.
Yeah.
And so many people tried buying tickets, like local press, like trying to buy tickets to see Emma Watson, like people just from off campus.
Yeah.
Trying to buy tickets. And usually, you know, it's not that they wouldn't ban people from off campus coming to see shows, but it was like literally nuts.
Yeah.
I think the website went down. So they had to like make an announcement. They're like, for this production of The Seagull, we will be selling tickets in a lottery system and you have to enter your Brown ID number to get it. And it was like
so wild.
But they like, nobody wanted to say why the reason was they were selling tickets differently. It was like this very difficult balancing act. And you know, I don't think like, it was just like weird because like there were a lot of like rich kids there whose parents were hyper wealthy or some level of famous. But I think that was just like so next level that I can't imagine being that wealthy. I can't imagine being that well-known. I cannot imagine like being the kind of person that changes how theater has to sell their tickets. Like, and so in that way, I do kind of like, maybe there's a sliver of me that like feels bad.
However
good of an actress she may have been, nobody's going to, you know what I mean? Everyone's talking about the fucking, I don't know, ticket sales.
Like, but unfortunately, we can't cast you because we really don't want a shit show.
Right.
But I'm, me.
But I'm Hermione. I'm just kidding.
Go fucking start a movie, you weirdo. That sucks. I can't imagine, especially if it's like your formative years, but you've already like had to live this whole other life. Wow. Well that's
because
Brown
she's our age.
You.
We like, we grew up with the cast. I mean, like, I know we're all around the same age. So I think like the cast and the characters were all like, I feel like they all grew up with our generation. So
Potters.
Yeah.
That's so weird.
I want to talk about the stuff you're up to now. How did you get into hosting for things like Scruff and other stuff? I know you sometimes do MTV as well. I want to know how, I mean, like, now that I know more about you, you speaking on a public platform just makes sense. But how did you kind of get into the hosting side?
Yeah, for sure. I think a lot of it started with like writing and digital media. Like I had a really weird journey here. Like when I first landed in New York, my very first gig was editing gay porn, like a porn company. Oh. I did that for like 2 years. And then luckily had a friend from this Second City program named Joanna Houseman. She's a comedian from Venezuela. She was working at this website that doesn't exist anymore called Flama. And they were like kind of a comedy digital media hybrid site. And I was like, hey, I'm trying to get out of the gay porn industry.
Wait, tangent. How'd you get into the gay porn industry?
That is a whole nother. I'm working on a pilot about that right now.
Okay, fair.
So I'm like revisiting so much of it. No, I'm just saying it's on my mind.
I'll wait for
I'm
the
happy
show.
To share.
I don't want, oh, really?
Oh, yeah. No, you're going to get a slightly fictionalized account. I'll give you the real damn story.
Okay, great.
I was broke. I was couch surfing. I was like on my third friend's couch. And the options were like, you know, I was like, I don't have any money. I need insurance. I need a steady gig. And I just started applying for every video editor position I could find. And this was back when like Craigslist was still popping. Mm-hmm. You know, I had found my ex on Craigslist. I found a job on Craigslist. Like it was great. And yeah, so I just applied to a lot of things. And I heard back from this company that was kind of nebulous about their job posting. They were like, you know, we're looking for an editor. Mm-hmm. We'll bring you in for a couple of weeks to try you out. And I didn't have a ton of production experience, but I had enough. Like, I knew how to use Final Cut 7. Mm-hmm. I kind of knew how to like do basic things like some color correction. I knew how to light a set with 3-point lighting. I knew how a tripod worked. You know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. I was like 21 and very green. And I met this director, and I went there and I like quickly realized, I was like, okay, this is fully a porn studio. It was like on the fourth or fifth floor of like a residential walk-up. It was the only live workspace there. And I was like, okay, I got to get this job. And I had interviewed a bunch of places. I went to Huffington Post. I went to BuzzFeed. I went to fucking Gawker, like every digital media site I could think of. And they were like, what? I don't get it. Like, are you a journalist? Are you like, what are you doing? And I was like, I just want to work in media. Yeah. Like, I'll write things for you that are funny. And they're like, I don't understand that. And I was like, me neither. I'm sorry. So that's the world I found. That's like the first place I found myself getting a job. And I think I'm really lucky that was the first thing I found. Cause like, that's how I started meeting drag queens and comedians in New York. Mm-hmm. Like, it was just like meeting porn stars. And then like, they'd have a drag queen friend. And like, we'd run into each other at a gay bar. And I would meet that drag queen. And the drag queen would be like, we have a 10-minute slot to fill in this show on a Monday night at a gay bar. And no one wants to see you. They're coming for me. But would you like to open? And I'd be like, absolutely.
That's awesome.
Yeah, that's a beautiful community. And probably something that's not really, you didn't go in expecting that probably, right? Like, so that's kind of nice. I love that.
Yeah, absolutely not. I hid that shit from my mom. I was like kind of self-conscious about it, but was also going through this like sexual awakening. Mm-hmm. So it like also coincided with like my, just the peak of my slut period in my life where I was like—
It sounds perfect. It sounds really
yeah, good. Hooking up with people on my lunch break, coming back to work, getting work done, going to another stranger's house after work, then going home and finishing the editing I didn't get done during the day.
Well, thank you so much for that tangent. Yes. I really appreciate you giving the rundown. Anytime. But you were, before I interrupted so rudely, you were talking about how your friend was a digital media company that no longer exists anymore, right?
So I did that for a little while. And, you know, there was a period where like that whole YouTube, Facebook, talking head shit was really popular. And, you know, I did that and it was fine and it was an okay outlet, but it wasn't really like, they didn't really want comedy and like, you know, it was always filtered through like the angle or the POV of like the site. And so I found myself like kind of just like talking about issues in a really kind of like fluffy and dissatisfying kind of way. It was like, what's going to get clicks? Like, how can we condense this to sound the most, I don't know, kind of over the top or
clickbaity?
Clickbaity. Yeah. And so that was it. And, you know, it was also the era where it's like these websites were just throwing up videos of police brutality constantly and like not getting in touch with the people impacted or like doing any follow-up interviewing. It was like, AP released this footage. Let's throw some text over it and like put it out. And I'm like, okay, we're profiting from trauma and putting it on Facebook. Great. And like that, I hated that. I really did. And so it's like, that's not what Flama was, but I think that's what the digital media landscape was while I was working in it. So like, you know, I did some really cool stuff. The last place I did work at was a Latinx media outlet where we got to do some cool stuff. We did this short documentary on like Chino Latino food, like Chinese immigrants either Chinese immigrants that had moved to Latin American countries and then lived in New York and were opening restaurants, or Chinese Latinx folks whose parents were Chinese immigrants. And so it was wild because we really found three different Chinese restaurants that kind of represented a fusion of different places in Latin America. And that was interesting. I got to fucking interview AOC while I was working there, which was dope. That interview is like still on Facebook somewhere. And she tweeted it out after it came out, which was wild.
Oh my God, that's so cool.
It was so wild too, because so I connected with her over Drag Race on Twitter for the first time.
Wait, really?
Yeah, fully. Like, she was like a very young candidate. She was this young Puerto Rican woman running against, I can't even remember his name now, but he was like third in line in the House. Yeah, so just like old white dude who wasn't paying attention to his district. And he was a Democrat. She was primarying him. And it was wild. And I remember the first time I pitched her to the website I was working at, they were like, this seems a little local. Like, we're not really sure if this is like a story of national interest.
Wow.
And then literally 3 months later, they were like, do you still have that connect to that woman running for Congress? And I was like, abso-fucking-lutely. That was great.
That woman running for Congress.
Yeah, they were literally like, that young Puerto Rican woman. And I was like, you are gonna remember her name.
How did you guys connect over Drag Race? I'm curious.
Yeah, I think it was the season like Miss Cracker was on and Aquaria was on. I forget what season that was. But she was just tweeting about it. And then I responded. And then like one day out of the blue, I just like DM'd her because she was like a local candidate.
Right,
and I was like, you know, kind of, I was like, it was that point where I had really started getting kind of involved in New York politics and like sort of what was going on. And I just DM'd her because I was like, here's a young Puerto Rican woman who lives in New York running for office. Like, cool. And then through that, I was like, hey, can I like get in touch with your people, your campaign to book something? And we did. And she spent we spent eight hours with her. And she talked to us through a whole campaign and like talked to us about things like sex workers' rights and like universal healthcare. And it was like, the most thrilling 8 hours I've ever spent in my life. And I'm so glad she got elected. Like, it was so cool.
It just proves that she was like down for the game and like accessible and like really wanting to like, I'm constantly so impressed by her.
Legitimately grassroots in every sense of that phrase, word. I don't know. But also, who knew she would be like the number one person the right would attack under any circumstance? Like, she would become enemy number one so quickly for just being like smart, articulate, and young.
Yeah. And like not progressive. Having, like rich parents that she just like was born into politics, like someone that actually worked for her shit. Like I don't know.
Literally, like they're like, she parked her Tesla. Oh my God. You're like, oh wow.
And so someone who's not afraid of the word socialist. A Latina who's not afraid of the word socialist is the scariest thing to the Republican Party.
Yeah.
Because as a fucking Latino growing up in Florida, I can tell you the one Republican tactic in that state every fucking election cycle. He's like, do you really want to vote for the radical socialist Democrats that'll make you feel like you're living in Cuba again? And it's like, God. Oh, fucking God, Christ.
I mean, yeah, but it's like a way to like to further oppress the all the Latin American people that you've colonized, right? Like, it's just.
Good times. Good times in this country that is trash.
I know, right? Yeah, seriously. But anyway, that was a very long-winded way of saying.
No, I loved
after those
moment.
Gigs. Yeah. I found more writing opportunities that were like more in line with what I wanted to do. So I like the MTV stuff. I started writing for Francesca Ramsey's show Decoded, and I did some guest spots there, which was cool. They had me on as a co-host for their show Need to Know every now and then. It's hosted by Domiti Pongo, who's amazing. He's like he's done really, really incredible work. There and you know, I would fill in for him every now and then, like way before the pandemic. We're back, oh my God, what seems like another lifetime. And yeah, and then the hosting thing was really cool because that was a Brooklyn nightlife friend named Derek Smith, who was a performer and a writer, and he was very involved in theater, and he was casting a queer trivia show on Scruff. And it was just like one of those things where it was like an old friend from like 2014 that's like seen me do unspeakable things on the stage at Metro on a weekday night. It was like, hey, we've both grown and we're in different fields now. You want to do something a little more professional? And I was like, yeah, but we still get to talk about messy things. It was fun. But yeah.
Yeah. I love that. I mean, like, that just makes sense that you're like, I mean, everyone that's listening to this and like you're interested in queer stuff. I mean, everyone should be interested in queer stuff, but you're an amazing host on Queerty. And
thank you.
The guests you've talked to are just, I don't know. I love the way you ask questions and like, it just, I don't know. I understand now why you're good at it. And what the benefit of always having a background of public speaking gives me, because I literally have like a speech impediment that still exists today. But that's cool to know how you got to where you are, you know? And I also want to ask, before we really wrap up, you're bringing back a monthly comedy show that you did before the pandemic, right? Let's just talk about that a little bit, because I feel like that'll be, by the time this comes out, I think it'll already be in full swing, hopefully.
Yes, absolutely. Okay, so it's actually same venue I used to perform at, brand new show, which I am really excited about. It's called The Lavender Scare, and it's basically going to be an LGBTQ plus show. The guests will all be members of the queer, trans, non-binary community, but it also incorporates elements of queer trivia and history through games. I am very excited about it. I actually just, this is well before July 1st. The first show is on July 1st, but I did book my first guest. So Joel Kimbooster is going to be one of the three guests. So I'm thrilled about that. I'm thrilled that he's in town. I'm thrilled that he said yes. I could not think of somebody I would love to have on more. And I think it's going to be fun because, you know, we're going to play a few games with the audience. And then the very last game of the show kind of culminates in the three comedians versus three audience members in a game that kind of looks a bit like my own riff on like a Chosen family feud, so to speak. I think it'll be a lot of fun. So
That sounds really fun.
Yeah, I love kind of gamifying the dispersal of information about queer history that is like rarely codified or has not been very much codified in academia until recently, maybe. But like, that's again, through shows like Queerty, through stuff like hosting, I've managed to like, just be exposed to so many great resources and people and authors, but also just information that I would not have found or perhaps not sought out if my job wasn't literally like, all right, we got to write new questions about queer history. Like what, mm-hmm. who else is there out there? And the reality is that there's a fucking shit ton of amazing queer, trans, and non-binary people throughout history that just haven't had a fucking book written about them or are a blurb at the bottom of an academic article that I had to find for free or use someone's JSTOR to access. Like just insane stuff. And it's, I don't know, even something as simple as like the Stonewall, the way we've sort of mythologized Stonewall, the more research you do into it, the more you realize that it is maybe not as clean cut as the retelling goes. But that's what happens when your history is preserved through sort of like oral storytelling and pushed to the margins, right? Everybody has their own kind of, it's like a Rashomon of history sort of. Right. So it's like, I try not to be prescriptive, but I do try to like maybe bring new names or perspectives to things we think we know. And so that's exciting to do. And it's been great to have people help me with that as well.
Yeah. History books are just fucking
strife with
scams.
Yeah.
Like, so I think, especially for queer people and people of color and marginalized communities, it's almost like we have to like educate everyone about our history because history books did a shit job because it was just told from the perspective of like a white guy, a white straight guy. So...
a white Christian straight guy.
Yes.
Always.
Yeah. I will say, you saying JSTOR really took me back. I was like, wow, I've not thought of that place in a long time. Never again, baby. Yes. Good for you, though. Good for you for actually doing the research, but I will never go back there. I got trauma
books from queer bookstores. Yeah, cool.
Fuck Amazon. Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Wait, I don't know if I. So, can you mention again for the people that are in New York, like what the venue is called and when it will be happening?
Yeah, so the venue is called Caveat. They have opened their doors again since June 1st. And you know, at the time you may listen to this, some of the restrictions have changed, but they've been very conscientious about that. And it's a venue that I used to host a monthly show at, so I'm very excited to be back. The show is called The Lavender Scare. It should be happening once a month. So the first one is going to be Thursday, July 1st. And hopefully the first Thursday of every month, we'll be seeing that show again. So yeah, just like a great excuse to bring through LGBTQIA talent that will have great sets, musical stuff, characters, stand up, and then play a little game with us at the end. And it'll be an hour of a great wine selection because that's my... my one demand coming back. I needed many white wine options if I'm doing a monthly show. So,
we'll definitely put info in the description, and also just everyone that's listening, like follow Gabe on his socials just to keep up. I'm sure you'll be posting about it too. So, I wish I was in New York just to go to the show because I feel like it's such a great idea. You know, like just a space with all queer people or like people that need to have their voices elevated rather than being like one or two people max in a normal comedy show, you know?
Oh, totally. Yeah. And I know people usually balk at audience interaction, but I'm kind of excited to...
Oh, I love it.
Yeah. I love stumbling into the straight person in the crowd and being like, all right, tell me who Stormy DeLavier was and why I know her name. Like,
it's
you know what
like,
I mean? Just throw
it's
out,
almost like Z-Way. Z-Way-esque in a way. Yeah. Like her same style of like borderline making you uncomfortable, but it's so hilarious. You know? Not uncomfortable, but like she asks the questions.
She asks questions to, you know, literally prove that we as a society have so much more work to do.
Yes.
Totally,
yes.
Yeah. Yeah, you just have to like make... the thing that is clear to you, but sometimes you have to make clear to others. And I think doing it in a comedic way or through a comedic lens is an easier way to kind of shake people into realizing it than being like, we don't talk enough about this. And it's like, oh God, okay. Yeah. Oh God, okay. Good
like,
point.
That's the reason if that's the reason why like cis straight white people probably like point the finger and they're like, they're always so angry. Like, why do you have to bring it back to this and this and that? It's just like, if you're open to learning, this is a more fun way to do it. If not, fuck off, you know?
Totally, like, yeah. Yeah, if you can't even handle this, then like, lost cause. Tickets are non-refundable. Bye. Have a good night.
Yeah, exactly.
Tickets are non-refundable, okay?
Yeah. So sorry.
Did you say his socials? You said him on socials.
No, you should share your socials because I like your handle.
Oh, awesome. Yes, thank you. Okay, so on Twitter and Instagram, which are, I guess, the only ones I use right now lately, my handle is Gaybones. It's GAYBONEZ. It is, a lot of people think it's a weird sex thing, and it's actually like a nickname my improv group gave to me in college. Which is when I made my Twitter, and I never thought I would have to use it professionally, and here we are. So,
do you have an email that's gaybones at like Hotmail?
Oh, no, 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 no.
AOL. Never went that far.
No, Game Bones at AOL.
Because that's when really I was like, I don't think I can send resumes and get past the firewall if my email is gaybones@gmail.com. Right. That'd be
Yeah.
You could be like, how dare you? That's homophobic of you to not offer me this job. Because my email.
The first lawsuit based on email discrimination.
Yeah.
I would love to be that precedent in the Supreme Court. Yeah, let's do it.
The first thing people look up, or like the first Google search when they look up your name is like this historical lawsuit. I wish that was the universe we lived
in. On JSTOR.
Yes, on JSTOR.
I just want to be the Obergefell v. Hodges of the 21st century.
Yes, exactly.
We're the new one, rather, because that did happen this century. Yeah.
Yes.
The 2010s were not that long
ago. What's time, though? You know?
Truly, again, we're coming full circle here. Yeah, time is a construct.
I don't understand how time works. I can't believe, I mean, yeah, by the time this comes out, it's not May, but I'm already fucked up that it's May right now. But anyways, thank you so much for being on our show. This has been so fun to get to know you better and to have people who maybe don't know you get to know you for the first time.
Thank you.
Awesome. Thank you, Shireen. Thank you, Anna. This was so much fun. I would love to come back anytime. Let me know if you ever need anything.
Of course.
And I can't wait to listen to this one. This is going to be great. It's going to be a lot of fun.
Yeah. I feel like I would love to have you back on to talk more in depth about, to critically talk about what's going on in Puerto Rico and like the history behind that, because I don't think a lot of people either know or don't care to find out. So, and I think it needs to be looked at more critically instead of just getting glanced over in like a headline, you know? So if you're down, that could be a future thought, but yeah. I could also just take this off air. So I don't know why I'm talking to you about a future episode idea, but keep it in, Billy.
On the record agreeing to this.
Yes.
Okay, yeah.
okay, everybody. I'm going to close this out. This is Ethnically Ambiguous. It's Ethnically Amb, A-M-B on Twitter, and Ethnically Ambig, A-M-B-I-G on Instagram. I'm Shireen. It's Shirohiro on Instagram and Shirohiro666 on Twitter.
And I'm at Anna Hosnier on Twitter. I went and followed Gay Bones. It's time you do too.
Yeah. Yeah. Honestly, y'all, he's, ever since I met you a couple months ago, like you are just always consistently so warm and so cool.
Thank you.
I've never met you in person, but like, I can just tell you give off like the best vibes if I were to see you in person.
Thank you so much. I can't wait to hang when I'm in LA next. Honestly, it's a shame that we've started working together during the pandemic because I used to be out there a lot. I'm excited to go back.
I don't think we would have worked together if it wasn't for the pandemic because I would have to be in New York probably, right?
That's real. True.
Oh, interesting. The future, we don't need to be around each other because of, I guess we realize everything is possible.
Podcasting,
everything is
kidcasting.
Things are possible through kidcasting.
I have never heard that word, and I'm like now obsessed with the word kidcasting.
Kidcaster Gabe.
Yeah,
it is pretty funny because
Celebration, Florida.
I remember listening to Radio Disney being like, "What a gig!"
Like
in my childhood bedroom, taping the songs that would play onto my tape recorder, and then yelling at my brother if he spoke behind in the background, like you're like,
I'm recording.
I will say the best perk was getting like the Samantha Mumba single before everyone else. You know what
God,
I mean?
Samantha
I would get like
they would, Mumba, you,
they would give us like CDs and tapes. Oh my God.
Oh my God, Ali and AJ. Oh, I loved
that
Ali and AJ.
Samantha Mumba literally just like brought me back to just, oh my God, Samantha Mumba.
Where is Samantha Mumba now?
Where is she? This is the first thing I got called tonight. Tonight.
Oh my God. Come on over tonight.
Gotta tell you.
Oh, gotta tell you.
She was Irish? Wow.
Wait, she's Irish?
That's what it says on the internet. Little did I know.
I had no idea.
When I found out Catherine Zeta-Jones was Welsh and not Latina.
The Zeta is there for a reason.
Wait, what?
A clear reason.
Apparently, it's not even like a Latina name. It's like her Greek grandmother's maiden last name.
White people are so dumb. Like, they're like, oh my God, this Latino woman. And she's just like playing into it. But
I saw that bitch in Zorro and I was like, she's been somewhere in Latin America for decades.
Same.
Like, until I was in college. Like,
same.
The cruelest prank. Anyway.
I mean, that's why I'll like low-key always not like Ariana Grande because she's like, she fully changed her race and is capitalizing on like this new voice
she
has. And like,
show. Yeah,
weird way she talks where it's like, what are you doing?
Congratulations on her recent nuptials. What if I was just really sucking up to Ariana?
Right.
And you know, personally, I love Ariana.
And I don't know what these two haters are talking about. I'm a huge Thank You Next fan. I don't really know her music too well. I'm sorry.
Well, it all sounds the same in my opinion. And hot take, I think it's bad. But
I love her. What does she sing?
Is there an equivalent? Because I know blackfishing is a huge thing, and like I think she's also guilty of that. But is there an equivalent to that for other races? You think like Latina fishing? You know what I mean? Like
I mean,
well,
so many
I mean,
people
we,
do that.
Yeah, we know a lot of white girls love to do the cholla brow with the hoop earrings sometimes. But yeah. I think there was, this is crazy, and this is maybe another tangent for another time. But even Rita Moreno, who is Puerto Rican, was actually like they browned her skin for West Side Story. Because even she didn't, quote unquote, look brown enough to be playing a Puerto Rican in a musical about Puerto Ricans.
So wild.
Wow. There is definitely a specific image that you're trying to be like, Puerto Ricans are darker than
right, but then not dark enough to be black Puerto Ricans. Because God forbid we acknowledge that black people exist in Latin America. Truly, that's a whole different, messy.
No.
Yeah. I love that we completely went on a different topic right after I closed. No, it's not your fault. It's like an indication of you being fun to talk to. But seriously, follow Gabe. He's amazing. And if you're in New York, please keep up with Lavender. Say it again.
Oh, it's called the Lavender Scare. It's going to be Caveat first Thursday of every month.
There you go. Lavender Scare at the Caveat every Thursday. If you're in New York, you have no excuse. I mean, if you're vaccinated, if you're not, don't leave your house. But yeah, thank you again for being on our show. And everyone, until next time.
At Gay Bones.
At Gay Bones.
Ethnically Ambiguous is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
Live Nation presents Concert Week. Now through May 14th, get $25 tickets to over 5,000 shows. That's up to 75% off a summer full of your favorite artists like 21 Savage, Alanis Morissette, Cage the Elephant, Celeste Barber, Dierks Bentley, Fade, Hootie and the Blowfish, Janet Jackson, Kidz Bop Kids, Meghan Trainor, Pistol Pluma, Sarah McLachlan. Get tickets to more than 5,000 summer shows for just $25. Until now through May 14th. Visit LiveNation.com/Concert Week to learn more and plan your summer with Sean Paul, Sum 41, 30 Seconds to Mars, and Two Door Cinema Club.
Are you still searching for your perfect place to call home? Well, now is the time to buy at Fisher Homes. If you're looking to move in before the end of 2024, May could be your last opportunity to start building your dream home and close before the year's end. If you're hoping to move in even sooner, Fisher Homes also has homes that are move-in ready and waiting for you, where you can start enjoying the benefits of homeownership even faster. Schedule your personal tour with a new home advisor today at fisherhomes.com and make this spring the season you find your perfect home sweet home.
Hey guys, back at the playground again, huh?
Yep. You know what this playground could use? A wine country.
Heck yeah. And some waves. So we could go surfing.
Oh, ah, yeah. Love that.
A redwood forest would be cool.
I'm in.
Ah, ski slopes.
Let's do it.
Tenor girl go shopping.
Yeah, baby.
Wait. Did we just invent California?
Discover why California is the ultimate playground at visitcalifornia.com.